The Protector, written by Mike Lunnan Wood and read by John Telfer.
The charred remains of the house's wooden frame stood stark and smoking as the young fireman played his hose back and forth in the first rays of the morning. In the dawn shadows, a gaggle of boys in dressing gowns watched quietly, and beyond them, the group of teachers and staff who had come running when the watchman raised the alarm. The ambulance had already been gone for more than an hour, but the shocked silence hung in the early light. For most of the watchers, it had been their first view of death. The pathetic, charred bundle that was eased with gloved hands into the green zip-up bag. The watchman had seen the fire from the other end of the school, the flames licking out from the spare room's window and catching the lower branches of the fir tree that had stood and shaded the house for 40 years. From there, the fire had raced up through the branches, crackling and roaring. Those staff and prefects not keeping the boys in their dormitories, away from the danger, ran to help, but were forced to stand impotently back by the heat and smoke. Later that morning, as the boys walked towards the dining hall for breakfast, they could see the grey police car still down at Mr. Morton's house, and for those who had been huddled at their dormitory windows, the topic was rich and exciting. One boy suggested that they would have to identify the body by dental records. Another guffawed at his friend's stupidity, saying that they already knew who it was, Mr. Morton, the languages master from the senior school. They walked quietly for a moment, each remembering the shambling old man, seemingly as old as the hills, who walked the cloistered main quadrangle in an old tweed jacket, discussing history with his 12th-year students. For those seniors he had taught, there were no jokes or macabre speculative statements. They had recognized something rare in the man, and for most of them, his glasses were an intellectual journey. He had arrived in the area the previous year and agreed, after some consideration, to take the senior German students as a replacement for the sick department head. He had then begun teaching a pilot course in Russian and finally stood in teaching his first love, history. For those lucky enough to sit before him, he managed to give the normally dry topic a fresh, modern perspective. Sometimes, as a direct answer to a question, he would talk briefly of his years at Corpus Christi, Cambridge. For him, the schoolboys were a refreshing change of pace, eminently suitable for a retired academic. They had none of the idle, slightly indolent ease of the Cambridge students, and absorbed knowledge like computers with a discipline that delighted him. They called him Teddy, a name they thought original, but in fact he had been called that in 1943, when he had first gone up as a very junior don. What the students, staff, and the policeman at the grey car didn't know was that in 1944 he was also called that by three men who were ostensibly employed by the army, but seemed to spend a lot of time in Whitehall sorting out the bickering between two divisions of military intelligence. Teddy Morton had an eye for bright young people, and over the next 30 years recruited many for MI6. In time, he was added to the full payroll and used when events demanded a fresh mind on an old problem, a mind unsullied by politics, departmental strife, or personal vested interests.